You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with a great interview for you here today. That there was a big milestone in the Survivor world that happened just last week, and it came to my attention that I had seen a post from our guest here today who posted about how it had been 20 years ago, and boy, time flies, because I remember exactly where I was on this night when Vesepia became the first Black person to ever win Survivor, and to date, some 20 years later, the only Black woman winner of Survivor. And here to catch up today, it is Vesepia Robinson. Vesepia, how are you?
I'm good. I'm so good, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm really excited to talk to you. First off, it's always nice to hear your voice, and I'm really glad to get the chance to catch up here after your big milestone. This up to 20 years.
Isn't that crazy, Rob? And the weird thing about it is that I didn't even recall it. I couldn't even fathom thinking about that. But all of a sudden, I started getting these pings on Instagram and Facebook of fans actually saying, Vesepia, congratulations. This marks your 20th win. This is when you won. And I was just like, wait, what?
That can't be right.
I'm like, yeah. And I was showing it to a couple of my employees at work, and they were like, are these guys stalkers? Are they stalking you? And you know, of course, I didn't think of it that way, because actually, when I looked back, there were actually a few fans that every year for like the last like 8 to 9 years have pinged me on that anniversary.
Yeah.
So either they don't have nothing else to do with their lives, or, you know, they really love the show of Survivor and they really appreciate my gameplay. So it really touched my heart to get those.
It was 20 years ago on a chilly night in Central Park for the Rosie O'Donnell.
Look, it was more than chilly, all right? It was freaking freezing out there. They literally had to give out, like, I think they gave them, like, heating gloves or heating pads or something that they were passing out to a lot of the contestants and people that were in the audience. But I remember that like it was yesterday. And in fact, Rosie O'Donnell, we had these little books that each one of us had picked up when we were in the airport, kind of waiting for our flights to leave from Tahiti. And on mine, Rosie O'Donnell was walking around signing each one of their little notes. And in mine, she was like, don't read this until after the show is over with. And I was like, okay. So later on that night, I went to my room and I opened it up. And she says, you know, your husband is cute. Also, I think you won. And oh. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm looking at the book right now and I'm just cracking up, because when I opened it up and I saw that, you know, of course I showed it to Jordan's dad and I said, look at this. And she was like, oh, maybe she knew something that you didn't know. And I was like, well, I guess. So yeah. It was good to have that little like oomph to make me feel good afterwards.
V, did you know that you had won going into the finale?
Hell no, I didn't. You know, of course, when you get on... When you're sitting back, and when Nalia and I got back to our camp for that night, you know, of course, you're playing the game back into your head and you're trying to think of who you think you may have votes. And of course, Nalia was thinking the same as well. Now, of course, we both knew that, like, I figured I had Sean's. She figured she had Pappy's. But then the rest of them was really a flip. Part of me, I was like, the majority of these folks out, really, except for Sean, were all from her original tribe.
Yeah.
So I was like, if I could have any, I may have John. because John and I had talked a lot, and we had always talked about wanting to be the first. And but I kept he kept saying, I would love to be the first gay, but we knew who was the first gay, which was Richard.
Yeah.
So that couldn't happen. And of course, and then he was saying, you know, it would be nice to be the first nurse. And I was like, well, I would love to be the first African-American. And I guess he remembered that. But other than that, I knew I didn't have Kathy's because she was straight pissed off at me. And I didn't have Zoe, you know, because Zoe really was close to Kathy. And then after that, really the flip was between, who was it, Rob and Tammy.
Yep.
Yeah. And I didn't know which way they were going to go because we knew that we had kind of struck a curve with the both of them early on. So I kept saying to myself, you know what? I will be happy with that 100,000. Yeah, I could do a lot with that. And going into the votes, that was my mindset. I wasn't saying, you know, yeah, I got this because I really didn't know. I was just like, you know, I will be fine with 100,000. But I knew if anything, it was going to be very close. And that was one of the reasons why I chose, you know, towards the end to flip on Kathy. And you know, give Nalia that opportunity to either, you know, make the vote, you know, when I ended up stepping off of that challenge and telling Nalia that, hey, you know what, I'll step off, let you have immunity if you take me to the final with you. Now, that was a serious stretch because I didn't know what Nalia's mindset was. I didn't know if she felt comfortable going up against Kathy or going up against me. I was hoping she was thinking the same way that I was thinking, that both of us would be stupid to take Kathy to the finals. You know, and so, you know, that's what I hoped her mindset was. And I don't know how their conversations had been when we were back at the camp, but she did not surprise me. She actually voted the way that I was hoping that she was going to vote. And so with that being said, I knew that it was probably going to be very close.
Did you hear from any of your castmates on the 20-year anniversary?
No.
Yeah.
And you know, and I wasn't expecting it. Now, I can say no, meaning they didn't initiate the call or the email first.
Yes.
You know, it was after, you know, people started chiming in, then, you know, some of them chimed in after that. So in that sense, yes, I did hear from them and I appreciated it. You know, I mean, it's just a blessing in itself to hear from people and not only hear from people saying congratulations, but then also hearing from people saying it has been a disservice that CBS or Jeff Probst or Survivor has done by not bringing you back, especially knowing the accolades and the firsts that you have had in your season of Survivor, that they still did not bring you back. And I was, you know, of course, that made me feel good, but that probably wasn't even anything that they were thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that you have spoken about this, and we had talked, you know, a few times in the last couple of years on the podcast. But we had done a Talking with T-Bird back, and it was right before Winners at War. And you had talked about how when the all-winter season happened, what that was like to go through that and to have not gotten the call from Jeff, considering all of the firsts that you had.
Yeah, it was tough. I'm not going to lie. Because, you know, as a lover of the game, I mean, and a true lover of the game, I have not missed a season. Knowing that certain seasons are coming up, and part of you is saying, wow, you know, I should be getting a call or at least an email asking, would I be interested?
Yeah.
You know, something. And it comes and goes and still nothing. And you know, it hurt. I'm not going to lie. It did hurt. But, you know, when the Black survivors had those opportunities to talk with CBS in regards to, you know, how the mistreatment has been and some of our recommendations, we all got a chance to kind of clear the air, speak our mind and share some words that, you know, we've been holding on to for years. And in my little speech to them. I just kind of broke it down similar to how I broke it down in the message that I put on Facebook and Instagram. And when I asked the question of, you know, why hadn't I ever been contacted? The only thing that I was told was it was an oversight.
Yeah.
You know, and it, is that the way to kind of put a stamp on it? Like, okay, it's done, closed, but an oversight? I just can't understand how that could be an oversight when I am the only African-American female to win the show. And yet nobody has ever said, you know, what about Vesepia? I mean, nobody has even brought it up to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's tough. And, you know, you can forgive, but it's hard to forget those, especially every year when these times come up, or every year when there's a great season and it comes down and you're hoping that it's finally going to be where there's going to be a new another African-American woman that's going to win. And she does not. That's why I'm praying for Marianne. It was funny because Marianne was like 4 years old when I was out there playing the game. And to see this young lady with the possibility of actually winning it, and I will guarantee you, this winner, if she comes out to be the winner, she's going to get her accolades. I mean, she's a brilliant player, and they've given her the showcase. They really, really have, and you know, they've really highlighted her. And even if she doesn't win, you know, they'll definitely call her back. But man, oh man, if she wins, then she's going to be, and they're going to beef her up. They're going to be like, this is the second African-American woman to win. And she's going to get the accolades that were due me that I never got. And I will stand on the sidelines with my pom-poms and cheer her on.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, I had been, you know, thinking about that where, you know, that it's 20 years and no other Black woman has ever won the game. And, you know, Cerie had you know, a really good shot a couple of years back, but ultimately that we have Marianne who it's 20 years later to like about a week apart potentially if she can do it. But you know, V, also you have a woman in Marianne who that I think you know also has, you know, flown under the radar in a classic Vesepia fashion, has stayed out of the drama. Also, a seminary student, which I think is very interesting as well.
And I love that about her, you know, and I really wish that they would have showcased a little, and maybe she did not kind of highlight a lot of her faith throughout the game. There were certain snippets here and there, but I really wish they would have showcased a little bit more of that. But the thing I loved about her is there is an evolution that they showed to her game. I mean, you know, at the beginning, they spotlighted her, just this quirky, wiry Black woman that all you see is people's eyes rolling in the back of their heads every time she talked or said something. And then some of her interviews, they were always so quirky. But she was entertaining, you know, and not only was she entertaining, but she was intelligent in her quirkiness, and that's what I loved about it. And then, you know, that lasted maybe like three or four episodes, and then she comes into this other, then she went quiet for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you did not hear a whole lot about her. And then all of a sudden, now she's coming back up strong again. So the difference between the two of us is that they can't say that she flew under the radar the whole time. And in my game, you know, they showed me a lot at the beginning. Then they made me go under the radar for the rest of the season until the very, very end. So I love the kind of, like I said, the ebbs and flows of her game that they showed, which really kept her very much highlighted. I mean, a lot of my fans have said, you know, the first time I saw your season, Vesepia, I did feel that you were very under the radar. But then I went back and I watched it again. And there was a strategy that you had that was stealth. And, you know, you don't see it until you watch it the second time. And I learned to appreciate your game a hell of a lot more than, you know, some of the others that were showcased throughout the entire season. And, you know, for Marianne's game, you pretty much, you knew her from the beginning and you didn't lose sight of her throughout the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Vesepia, if I may say so myself, I do think that your style of play, I think, would translate very well to the new era of Survivor that I think that if they ever did drop the two, keep the four, that I think that, you know, you could have a real shot at playing another successful game.
You know, the game is so exciting now, and it is beyond fast. And again, I'm only going by what I see on television, but it is moving at like a stealth mode. And I would be one of those ones sitting back, kind of chillaxing, mm-hmm. and saying, okay, I'm gonna let these young cats kind of wear down, and then I'll pop up and do what I need to do. But it very much so is a fast-paced game. To be honest, I don't even know if I'd ever want to go back out now. I'm 50, I'll be 57 in December, and you know, the knees are not the way they are, and I look at some of these challenges and I say, there is no way in hell I'd be out there trying to slide down some 90-foot, 100-foot, you know, slide and hit down with the impact on my knees, I'd sure. be out so quickly. Now they can always bring me back as be some content expert and talk to them about some things that they could or could not do. But I really don't know if I want to play anymore. I mean, I don't think I have anything else to prove. And, you know, after 20 plus years of not being asked, it does put a sour taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. That, you know, as much as I love the game, I mean, I'm sitting here staring at my torch right now. And I just don't think that I'd want to go out to physically play the game anymore.
Now, this week, we saw Marianne make that really big move to take out Omer, who was another person playing, you know, a really strong game. Mm-hmm. Did you have any thoughts about the week that Marianne had on Survivor?
It was phenomenal. And the way she strategically played it, and again, editing has a lot to do with it. I love the way that she came forthright and really kind of put this whole notion in the castmates' minds that, hey, you know, I've got some items in my back pocket that if you don't go with me, I'm not going to use them, you know, and it was incredible the way she did it, because one minute editing made it look like the guys were going to win and they were going to side with Jonathan and Mike in their decision. But part of me was just like, I know that she's going to stand her ground. And if they don't stand her, if they don't stand with her, then she's going to call them out. And that's the other thing I loved about her, is that she was not shy about calling these guys out of tribal council. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I kind of figured that Jonathan, as big as they are, and Mike, as big as they are, that they probably realize, you know what, this girl has got this idol. She's willing to play it with us, you know, and she'll probably call us all out. So we better try to work with her. I do think that, doesn't she have one more, like, trick, or she can't play him anymore after
she has? After six? So she has an idol that she can play in the next tribal council.
Yeah. And if anyone else, if anyone else knows about that, I think that they would probably try to get her out and try to have her just hold on to that idol. But I would bank that she would just play it just for the hell of it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any overall opinions on Survivor 42 as we approach the finale this week?
I thought it was one of the best. I mean, we always say that after the one after the other. I really think casting has been doing a great job in selecting the individuals, not just the African-Americans that have been on here, but across the board. And honestly, you're so used for years to having the cute little girls with the cute little bikinis. And it's just been so refreshing to see a huge population of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, and people looking like folks that you'll see walking down the street in your neighborhood and not walking down the street in your ritzy neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So that has been extremely, extremely encouraging. And I do applaud whoever's been casting. One of the things that me and a few friends had a nice conversation about was during the one episode where who was it? Drea and Marianne.
Yeah,
and Marianne, when they walked into tribal council and they saw who was already in the jury.
Yeah.
And, you know, it blew them away. And where others probably not think the way they were thinking, I was thinking the exact same thing, you know, and I would have thought that way as well, that, oh, my gosh, OK, there's two of us. Is it going to be one of us next? And I wouldn't be able to vote for him. I would not, you know. And so in that situation, another thought came to my mind is, you know, we always get to this point where we're saying nobody knows what's going through our mind, you know, and that's not the way we think. And I think after a while, those conversations are going to become null and void to people because they're going to get tired of hearing it. Because I think this is like the third season where in a tribal council, they've had that conversation of, you know, other people or white people don't know what black people are thinking and don't know what we're going through when we see, you know, our brothers and sisters get voted out and we just can't vote for them. You know, that conversation after a while gets to become numb to some folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, even when I was listening to it in that episode, I was like, man, I bet you there are a lot of people sitting at home going, oh, here we go again. Here comes the same conversation. Are we, you know, is it going to be this every season that there's going to be a bunch of black people? And when they get to this point, we got to hear this conversation. And at some point, I'm wondering, when can we get past that and actually just play?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why does that have to be part of the narrative all the time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we've heard it a lot. You know, we've heard it over and over again. And not saying that it's not necessary and it's not important, because it is. But how can we at some point get past that part and just kind of play?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I want to make sure I understand what you're saying, that because I at first I thought you were saying that, like, will the show stop showing those conversations? But are you saying that you want to get to the point where the players, you know, don't have to have these types of conversation at tribal council, because we've already reached, you know, that understanding with all of the players?
It's both.
Yeah,
it's both. Why does it have to continue to be a narrative for Survivor when it gets there? And then why do we as black people, and understanding that this is part of our life, but also understanding that we've heard it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard it a lot. But when can we get to the point where we're just like, I'm just playing this game?
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily have to become part of our narrative, that we have to bring it into the picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
For Drea and Marianne, it was such a unique circumstance for them too. And this was something that, you know, I hadn't thought of when I first watched that episode. But when I had seen, it was actually Davey from David versus Goliath mm-hmm. brought up this point on a TikTok that he had made. But that, you know, Drea goes into that tribal council and she sees that, you know, Chanel was already on the jury, and mm-hmm. then Roxroy got voted out.
Yeah.
And she knows that, you know, like, okay, the person that she was told to vote out is Marianne.
Yeah.
And the person that Marianne is told to vote out is Drea. And so even if she plays her idol, that she's like, okay, well, I'm going to play my idol and save myself. And guess what? Then Marianne is going to go home, and she has to like get Marianne also to play her out. Like I'm going to play my idol. Marianne, you got to play yours too. That's the only way we're going to both save ourselves. And Drea, you know, really had to, you know, in a lot of ways, ultimately, like, tank her game in that night, because that she, you know, has to play an idol there in that spot. And ultimately, you know, two rounds later, she's out of the game. But for Marianne, in a way, like, you know, especially if they're going to come for Marianne at this next round, it actually became a way where, you know, because of what happened that night, where Marianne has an idol now that nobody knows about going into the final five.
Mm-hmm. Yep. At least that's what we think nobody else knows. We don't know yet.
Right.
But even with that, you know, that narrative was so powerful. I mean, I was in tears because I felt that entire jury. I felt that entire tribal council. And even Sean and I had a quick conversation about it.
Yeah.
But also, you know, that could have easily had been, you know, and we don't know, again, we don't know because of editing. We don't know if Drea and Marianne had a conversation at the camp and, you know, talked about what if we go there and, you know, it's, you know, our other brother and sister on the tribal, you know, on the jury. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? You know, what are we going to do? And based on that, it didn't seem like they had a conversation, but we don't know. But yeah, they had to make some smart decisions right there. And I applaud the both of them by being very candid in their thought process and sharing, how they felt. And I applauded, the majority of the people that were that were in the cast that really felt their heart in that situation and really understood where they were coming from, based on kind of like an ally, mm-hmm. you know, not as another Black person. Cause you know, when you're white, you really can't truly understand what the person is going through. However, I did feel that as an ally, they were empathetic to the situation.
As somebody who talked with the production, you know, back when they were trying to figure out how to pull off the diversity casting initiative, have you been happy with most of what you've seen from Survivor in this past year?
I really have. It seems like they took what we, both our group and the other group, there were two groups that were part of this. I really do believe that they heard us and they took what we said to heart, and it has been reflected in the last few seasons. Now, the next thing that we're asking is how long will this last? You know, is this something to appease us for 3, 4, 5 seasons? And then they were like, okay, now let's go back to our status quo. Or will this continue to be the way in which Survivor will be going forward? And I really do think that it should continue, and I'm hoping that it does. We know in everything, it's all about ratings. I'm really curious to see, has the ratings dropped?
No, they haven't. Actually, I think this past episode, from what I read, was that the ratings have improved as the season has gone along, and you know, all of TV. I mean that that if any one of your season's episodes would have done this, everybody would have been fired at CBS. But no, this is. I think they're very happy with how the episodes are doing now. I mean, but that, I mean, what did you have? 25 million people a week watching?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yep. How many are there watching now? And I'm sure it's way more than that.
I think I saw the numbers this past week where I think it was like it's somewhere in the neighborhood of between 5 and 6 million, I think, were what the numbers were reported. But the show for like all of television, like that's a really good number for TV now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm sure. But yeah, my prayer is that they will continue, because like I said, I think the casting has been phenomenal in the last couple of seasons. I mean, even was it season 41? I can't remember. Yep. Who was the one where the lady who was the minister?
Yeah, Shan. Yeah.
Shan. Yeah. Loved her. Loved her. Loved her gameplay. And it was unfortunately, I really thought that maybe she would do it, but then that she would be the next African-American winner. But of course, you know, people that get that much spotlight usually don't win. Mm-hmm. this was just a really top notch cast. I mean, across the board. I mean, like Lindsay, I love Lindsay. At the beginning, I didn't hear a whole lot about Lindsay. And a lot of people were saying that Lindsay's game was similar to mine, that under the radar type thing. And then now she's really starting to bubble up and come forth. But I've actually enjoyed her game as well.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer. Streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Vesepia, do you have any thoughts on all of like the new twists and everything that they've added to the game? Because I know, like myself, that we come from not the new era of Survivor.
Yeah, I love these twists. I mean,
you gotta
do something. I do. I am one. I'm nostalgic in certain things. But in other things, no, I like the twist. Because when I think back to our season, I mean, my gosh, now when I really think back to our season and I look at the seasons now, I'm like, our seasons were boring as heck.
Oh.
And I really do mean that. The one thing that I did love about our seasons compared to this season is you really got to know the people a lot more. Everyone.
Yeah.
A lot more. Really, really in depth. And I think to a certain degree, Rob, that they're kind of bringing that back.
Yeah.
Because this season, you really learned a lot about the individuals and their lifestyles and their homes. And there was a time in Survivor where you did not get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you're just like, okay, these are so boring. The thing I do miss from our seasons that they really don't do a whole lot now is, and probably because they go to the same place for every, they shoot the show at the same place.
Yeah.
I used to love the scenic shots that they used to take and make. They were just so beautiful and it would just take your breath away. And you would seem like you were there with the contestants, where now they don't do that as much. But I love the speed of the game. I mean, I'm on the edge of my seat the entire time. I love the fact that idols go back into play when they've been played. Just the whole idea of, and I love the one twist that they added that Drea got, where
the knowledge is power.
Yes. And was that the one where she had to stick her hand and she had that red stuff on her arm?
Yeah,
that was phenomenal. I love that. I love the parts when they have to sneak out of the camp at night mm-hmm. and go somewhere and try to come back. I mean, I'm just like, man, nobody catches them. These people sleep that hard?
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I do. I'm like, keep them coming. What I don't like is when they get boring. Mm-hmm. And you've always got to play the game. One thing that I do wish they would bring back, Rob, and I don't think that they've done it yet, is bring back night challenges.
Yeah, they haven't done those in a while.
Yeah.
Like Jeff wants to go to bed.
Yeah. Come on, dude. Please. I'm just like, I loved it. And they don't do a whole lot of challenges where they're running through the woods. You remember you used to have those carabiners and you have to snap the carabiner on and
yeah.
Yeah, they don't have those anymore.
I think they haven't done that. No, I think that the last time they did that, I think that was when they did the second chance season. They did a night challenge and they did running through the jungle and people loved it.
Yes, I think it's great. But, you know, they end up compounding these challenges into a small, you know, area so they don't have to do a whole lot of cleanup and things mm-hmm. like that. But, yeah, I do miss those. I do like the fact that they change it up by adding a puzzle, because if they didn't add a puzzle at the end, these people would, like, sweep away with challenges.
Yeah.
And so I love the idea of bringing the puzzle because it forces people to get stumped. And then it gives other people opportunities to come back and, make the game interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I do wish that they would also, because I know they bring back a lot of past challenges. I think the majority of the challenges are all, you know, challenges that have been done before. And each time they bring a challenge back, I'm like, okay, when are you going to bring back a challenge for my season? And so far, I don't think I've seen one.
Yeah. They do have like their regular challenges that they go through. Yeah. Where is stilts? Okay.
Right.
Where is fly a kite?
Oh God. Yeah. I don't want that one. Forget that one.
Fly a kite and win a Snickers bar. Where's that?
But where is eating the rotten fish?
Yeah.
And you have to dunk your head
in. They don't do that anymore, V.
No, they don't. Where is where everybody has to try to build fire, and then the first kernel of popcorn that pops, you know, you're the winner.
Yeah.
What happened to those one where you're sitting there and Jeff is telling this long, drawn out story at midnight, and then you got to run through the woods and try to figure it out? You know, those were some classics.
Yeah, bring it back.
Yeah, but I don't even think we had not one puzzle. I'm trying to remember, did we even have a puzzle? I think that one where we had to kind of do that that little cloth thing where you had to pull strips back and forth.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but that was so silly. God, that was so silly. I watched that about 2 months ago, and I was like, oh my God, it was so boring and so silly.
You know, you and I were scheduled to talk. This one bums me out for a couple of reasons. You and I were supposed to talk, I believe it was March 12th, 2020. And basically, we were supposed to talk, that it was a Thursday afternoon, which it might, of course, like March 11th, was the day, like the world shut down for COVID. You, of course, working in healthcare, it was not a good time. You said, hey, Rob, we need to do this another time. This is not, I don't have time to talk about Survivor right now.
God, I don't even, did I ever tell you why?
Well, yeah, well, I knew that there was like, that the coronavirus was going everywhere. Yeah. It was like, that everybody was like, well, now what do we do? They told us go home. Now what? You're like, Rob, this is, I have to deal with a lot of stuff right now.
Yeah. You know, those times it was tough. You didn't know if you were coming or going. I think, you know, during those times also, you know, we weren't sure if we were going to have jobs.
Right.
And I wasn't sure if I was going to have to be letting some of my staff members go. Two of my staff members chose to leave and take early retirement. And, you know, then, of course, your job, you don't know. So, yeah, it was a lot going on. It really was. But, you know, my motto is, and this too shall pass. And look at us. We're talking now, Rob.
We're talking now. I'd like the coronavirus to pass, but, you know, it's a work in progress.
You know, it's going to be like the flu.
Okay.
We're going to have to take a shot every year.
Okay. All right.
We're going to have to.
All right. Did you have any thoughts from Winners at War about how you would have handled that whole situation if you were out there?
If I was out there, why you want to dredge this up, huh? you know, I love the way I played the game last time. I think I would maybe have allowed myself to get a little bit more screen time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I would have just been a little bit more talkative to the point where I knew what I say would get on screen. Because the last time when I was out there, my thought was I didn't want them to take what I say and use it against me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was keeping my stuff to myself. And that ended up backfiring.
Yeah.
You know, and so the lessons learned that I think I would just probably expose myself a little bit more than what I did before.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have loved to connect with a really strong female alliance. I love girl power. And I really would have tried to connect with some strong women that I could kind of ride together with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned that you had spoken with Sean about a episode from this season. I know that you two are very close. How's Sean doing?
Yeah, Sean is good. We talked probably about 2 weeks ago because, you know, both of our sons came back home from college. So I was checking on him and checking on Noah and seeing how he was doing being back home. And of course, Sean was checking on Jordan, which has been great because, you know, Sean is also Jordan's godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he'll reach out to Jordan on his own and, you know, send him a little something because he'll always say, you know, these young men got to have something in their pocket. So
yeah.
He'll always kind of share that. But we don't talk Survivor a whole lot. We really talk about our lives.
Yeah.
And our families and how we're doing. And then every now and then, because I, like I told you, I watch it religiously. He does not.
He doesn't follow it that closely. No, I know that. Yeah,
he does not. But every now and then he'll hear something or maybe just have it on and then he'll ping me.
Yeah.
And he'll go, did you watch that? You know, and I say, yep, I'm sitting right here watching it, you know, mm-hmm. and we'll talk a little bit about it. But, you know, that relationship is unlike any other.
Yeah.
My relationship with Sean goes beyond the game. And that was a godsend for me because, you know, he comes from New York. I come from the West Coast. But man, oh, man, when we talk, we are so real with each other. We are so raw with each other. He knows my emotions. I know his. I know when he needs me and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about, and even when I've talked with other people that have been on Survivor, I don't know if there's a relationship closer.
I don't think so. I it sounds like that, you know, you are like fully aware of this and appreciate it. But, you know, I get to talk with a lot of the players and other than like a romantic relationship, mm-hmm. like Rob and Amber, there are not, from what I know, that close friendships that stand the
right.
test of time where, you know,
exactly.
that people who are just like really part of each other's lives where, you know, and they, that goes beyond Survivor. Like those are so few and far between.
I agree. I really thought that like Papi and Aaliyah were going to have that, not to say that they don't, but I don't hear about it as much.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there are a couple of others, not just my season, but, you know, some of the other seasons, I thought that there were going to be those really close knit relationships that you would hear about, you know, that they talk on the regular and they go, yeah, we talk every now and then. But, you know, Sean and Sean and I can go like a month or two without talking. But when we do, but, you know, we're pinging each other on Facebook or we're pinging each other on a quick text, you know, and then all of a sudden he'll call and we'll have like a 2-hour deep conversation.
Yeah. That's really cool that you two have that because I think that you could probably count on one hand like the number of friendships that are like that, if any, across, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of people that have played this game over the years.
Yeah. Definitely. And, you know, and I always have been his biggest supporter and fan, and he with me as well. He was the one person that I was, and I still to this day shocked, was never brought back. I know that he was invited at one point and at the last minute, they didn't bring him, which was extremely disappointing to him and to all of us. But very surprising that he has never been asked back.
Yeah. You know, he and I, you know, talked a lot like over the last couple of years. And like, you know, I hope he knows like what a big fan of his I've always been. I used to always say that I just thought that mm-hmm. he was like just that, you know, not only like a good player at the game, but just like one of the most talented people they ever found on the show.
For real. And not just talented, you know, on the show, but talented off the show. I mean,
yes, that's what I mean.
He started his Boys to Men program and back 20 years ago and still going strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that he hasn't had any opportunity to really showcase that and talk about it, where so many others have had those opportunities. And, you know, I feel sorry for that, you know, because he's been doing this on his own for all these years. And to just be able to get, you know, some, whether it's financial support or anything to help them and let people know that others do believe in him, that just has not happened.
You know, you mentioned your son, Jordan, how he had just come back from college. One of the cool things you and I had been talking about before was that you put out a book with your son. Can you tell people a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So my son and I started this book during the pandemic at the beginning of COVID when we were at home just chillaxing. And I love to write. and just the stories that Jordan had grown up with from his grade school years were so memorable and really meant to be put in paperback. And so I brought the idea to him to pull out a couple of his experiences, and he said, absolutely. So as I wrote, he shared. And the first book is called Moms and Me, M-O-M-Z, and Me. And it's two stories in one, and they're real life stories. And the stories are pretty much 100% intact. There is a little bit of embellishment. We did change the names, like Jordan's name is not Jordan in the stories. Mm-hmm. And both of them are very much real world stories. One of them was in relations to in our neighborhood where we live, in the apartment that we live in. One of our neighbors who unfortunately passed on, but really always believed in Jordan. And Jordan used to run around with the other little boys in the neighborhood. And the other little boys weren't all that nice, mm-hmm. but they were, you know, they were kids. They were his age. So he'd run around with them. The little kids would always get in trouble, but Jordan would always stand there while all the other kids would run away. Jordan would stand there and take it, because I used to always tell him a coward is the one that runs away.
Yeah.
And this neighbor always noticed that about Jordan, and always said that, you know, you're going to grow up to be a great, great young man. And unfortunately, when he passed away, he let us know how much he appreciated Jordan. And so really that story is all about, you know, standing up for yourself despite, you know, how others, what others may think of you. And then the second story is all about the internet. And we know how the internet can draw students in and draw kids in a negative way.
Yes.
And this is about a young bully at his school putting up a fake Facebook page about another young girl. And Jordan was the only kid in their class that stood up and said, this is wrong. And while all the other kids ended up getting expelled from school, Jordan was the only one that did not. And so, yeah, we've taken those two stories, and they have a really powerful faith-based foundation to them. So really kind of listening to the word of God and understanding that your faith and the things that you believe in are really foundational. And that, so you make decisions based on that.
Yeah.
So it was labor of love, and we're so proud of those books to the point where he's ready to start doing Moms and Me too.
Oh.
And so definitely, if you have kids between the ages of like 8 to 15, I think that they would enjoy these stories. You can read them to them, or they can read them themselves. So please go to Amazon and purchase Moms and Me.
Okay. Yeah, I might have to make my son do a book report on this.
Yes, have him do it. He'll love it.
Yes.
And I'd love to get your feedback on that, Rob. Definitely.
Okay. All right.
Let me ask you this question. Would you go back and play if they asked you?
Oh, V, what a pivot. yeah. Look, it would not be top of mind for me. Like, I wouldn't be dying to. And I was very fortunate, you know, that mm-hmm. I got to go out and play. For, you know, like within like a year after, you know, basically, you know, that we came 1 year after your season. And, yep. you know, and then I was back out there 1 year later where in my mind, you know, you should have been out there with us then. Forget season 40.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it didn't go great. Yeah. So it's not all it's cracked up to be. But I used to say, I don't know. Like, you know, it would be hard to say no that my kids aren't so little. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it would be, you know, a good at the very least, I think it would be like a good, you know, advertisement about, you know, what I do here on the podcast. But I do feel like, you know, they have said that they are really focused on the new era, the new players.
Yeah.
And so, It's not the kind of thing, you know, that, you know, I'm really, you know, that I have a strong desire to go do again. But I do think, you know, if you do get asked, I do think, you know, you have to consider it. So my short answer is, yeah, I think I would, you know, accept the invitation. That being said, I think there's probably almost no chance that it's happening.
Yeah. Well, I do hope. I mean, I don't know how long Survivor is going to run. I mean, it's had such a long, rich legacy to it. Mm-hmm. I really do hope at some point that there is a personal invitation for everyone who wants to come back, whether it's for a Survivor reunion, and they actually bring, and not to compete, but maybe like for one of the seasons and have us come to like the finale. And it's just because we would have enough to fill an entire audience now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just have all of us come back.
Yeah. And the, you were at the 10-year reunion, right?
Yes.
Yes. And that was, you know, that was one hell of a party.
It really was.
I don't know if they would ever do that again.
And they should, you know, they really, really should. It's unfortunate that they don't give enough kind of appreciation.
Yeah.
To us as a whole. I mean, I see so many of these other shows, whether it's Big Brother or whether it's The Bachelor and Bachelorette, you know, they bring a lot of them back for different things and sitting in the audience and stuff like that. And granted, I know that Survivor picks and chooses the ones they want, but to really open it up to as many who would like to come back, mm-hmm. to allow that to happen, I think that would be great. I mean, because I know, especially if it's in LA or New York, you know, people are going to have other parties. Even if CBS didn't do a party, you know, there's going to be so many other survivors that are in those areas that are going to throw parties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I'd like if they ever, you know, maybe it's season 40, like who knows, like what they might have done. But again, I'm not going to hold my breath for that one either, Vesefia.
They'll do it, but if they do, I hope they don't wait too long and half of us are on our walkers and, you know, we come rolling up in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then, you know, we got to kind of give credit to, you know, some of our, obviously our Survivor family members that have passed on, you know, like Clay just recently passed away. And I was very close to Clay. And
oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, he was seasoned right after mine.
Sure,
and,
sure.
You know, we kept in touch for a long time. I mean, I haven't talked to him probably in about 2 or 3 years, but, you know, I pray that he rests in heaven and rests in peace.
Yeah.
And yeah, he will be missed.
The, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I had no idea that you were close to Clay. I had met him a couple of times, him and his wife. They had come through to the finales and, mm-hmm. you know, always seemed to be like very excited to be around anything Survivor. And so, yeah, I hadn't really spoken about that yet. But do you have anything that you can share about knowing Clay with people who only knew him from the show?
The last time that I actually like talked to Clay, like I said, it's probably about 4 years ago, but even before that, probably about 5 years ago, I can't remember if it was an event that we were at and Clay's wife was there and I had a chance to kind of, I think it was like the second time I met her and just a beautiful spirit. Yeah. And you know, if you ever want to see what love is, they were really the epitome of it. And, you know, they just modeled a good, wholesome, wonderful relationship. So, you know, my prayers go to her and the family, because I know that he will be definitely missed as a strong family man and very strong father figure. So, you know, I wish them all the best. I haven't reached out to her. I didn't know her that well to the point where I would have done that, but definitely looking at, you know, like Tanya's Facebook, and I've put stuff on there. So, it's just unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions for you that I got from the listeners of the podcast. Actually, this first one is a statement. Brandon Alexander said, "Just tell Vesepia how much she and Sean meant to me as a young Black Christian man watching Survivor. I feel like I was watching my own family out there. Such a big fan."
Oh, Brandon, thank you so much. you know, we never thought about what the young people were thinking about. We did think about our older seasoned survivor lovers that were of the African-American descent, what they were thinking about. And we wanted to make sure that we made them proud while we were out there and show that despite the fact that we were in a competition, that, you know, we were going to hold ourselves at the highest esteem to each other. And, yeah, you know, we hope that we were able to do that. And thank you so much. And we're glad that we were able to make you proud.
Yeah. I mean, that was something that, you know, you and Sean, you know, it was like historic that you were, you know, not only just on the show, but you were also like talking about like what it meant to be Black and be on the show at the same time. And knowing that the audience was watching the show. And that was not really ever something that we had ever seen where contestants were breaking the fourth wall in that way.
No, it was huge. And, you know, as much as I loved the show even before I came on, I didn't see that between the other African-American contestants that were out there. And it's not like I went out there saying, this is what I'm going to do, because, you know, I never met Sean until I got out there. Mm-hmm. And just the moments that we had to talk once we got on the show and listening to each of our stories, our families were very similar, and that's pretty much with like every African-American family. You know, we're going to be queuing, you know, they're going to be talking about it, you know, they're going to be sitting back slapping bones or playing bid whist or spades and and talking about, you know, these young people out there playing this game. And we wanted to give honor to them.
Yeah.
And to be on such a huge venue to do it. Yeah, we just wanted to make them proud, and we felt that we did. And hearing from Brandon and many others, it felt so wonderful. And not to mention to have the platform to share our faith.
Yeah.
And to do it so openly. And if you remember, you know, back in our day, Rob, we used to be able to bring out a luxury item.
Sure.
And I don't know if they can anymore and they just don't highlight them, but I wanted to bring my... Oh, okay. I wanted to bring my Bible and they told me no. So I was really disappointed. I was just like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. And then Sean had his Bible. So I was like, oh, okay. So they didn't want me to bring mine because maybe we could share, you know? Yeah. And it was just powerful because those were those opportunities where, you know, we connected so much on the Word of God, and to the point where we even were able to affect some of our castmates. You know, some that were not really followers of Christ, or maybe were, but put it to the wayside, we were able to affect some of them to the point where some of them changed their vote because of it.
Wow.
I won't tell you who,
okay.
But.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and the other part of, you know, this whole thing, and, you know, Brandon alludes to it, who he was there in the real time. But, you know, the thing that we could have never imagined when, you know, at this point in time when we went to go play on Survivor was that, you know, when you did your season, I did my season, and then it was over. And then unless you knew somebody that recorded it, it was like it was never seen again. It was gone. You had to be there. But now it's almost as if these seasons are just like playing all the time because of the way that everything is available and accessible on demand. So what is it like for you now when young people like come along and, you know, somebody like a Marianne, who you said is four when the first season, but she says also, I've seen every season except for six episodes of Chocachines. You know, at some point, you know, young Marianne is growing up and watching you win for the first time. And I'm sure you must hear from people all the time that are young people who, you know, have just watched your season now.
Constantly. And it's so funny because, especially now on Instagram, all these people are saying like queen, legacy, yes. Queen. And I'm sitting there like the queen should be Sandra because she's won twice. Mm-hmm. But I think they're saying a queen in the context of being the first African-American.
Yeah.
And man, you have no idea how proud and how honored that makes me feel. And especially when some of these come back and they say, yeah, I was 2 years old when your season came out, or, you know, I was five. Right. But my parents loved it so much that we went back and we looked at them again. And I'm just like, wow. Or when somebody comes back and goes, hey, Vesepia, did you really? I'm just like, are you watching it? And they go, yeah, I'm watching your season right now. And I just wanted to tell you that was such a smart thing you did. And I'm like, oh my gosh. But yeah, you're right. It's constantly, you know, up for people to watch over and over again. And every now and then I'll like type something into YouTube and something will pop up. Mm-hmm. Or these different, and I don't know if you know these, but these different things that come up on YouTube is like the top 10 mm-hmm. Birthdays that happen in Survivor. Or the yes. top whatever.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And some of them crack me up because I'm just like, oh, Survivor Marquez has made the top 10.
Yes.
But it's good to know that, man, despite everything, and some of these are just like recently made, mm-hmm. that despite everything, that our show still holds some weight.
Yeah.
You know, as one of the best. And, you know, and I pride myself on that. And I don't know if it's because of, you know, Boston Rob, or because, you know, it was the first time they did the Purple Rock, or, you know, all these different things.
The first time that the vote flipped,
first time somebody's birthday was celebrated on the show.
First time somebody, you know, got peed on.
Yes, exactly. You know, all of these different things. I mean, the last one of those I saw was I think they gave our season like number two, or, you know, of the top 10, number two or three of one of the best flips was when they did the coconut chopping.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, you know, God, we actually are very well known and still very relevant.
Yeah. I mean, I hope, like I've told you before, but, you know, that moment where, you know, I watched that play out, like that was like such a huge moment for me. I remember exactly where I was that night. And I was just like talking to nobody. I didn't have a podcast then, V, to talk about this stuff. I was just talking to like nobody at my house. Like maybe my mom was home and then she was probably like, please shut up. But I was like, oh my God, this changes everything.
It was crazy. I remember that like it was yesterday. We're sitting there and Sean is saying to us, y'all see what they doing?
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly how they're going to be picking us off. Watch this. And then, you know, and I was sitting there, I was singing a song in my brain. Mm-hmm. And Sean all of a sudden was starting to ping this in my ear. And then he started, you know, turning to Leah and Pascal and started saying it to them. And then all of a sudden it was like the light bulb, you know, came on in their heads. And then it was like, oh my gosh, we need to go back and readdress this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just such a monumental moment in Survivor history. And many times we don't get the full credit for, but when I see stuff like that, you know, I pat myself on the back and I said, you know, I was part of that.
Yeah. No, it changed the game completely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a huge moment.
Yeah, I still have people calling me either the pancake or the flipper. And they were like, you know, you were the first one to actually start flipping in the game. And you were able to make your way through it. Most people that flip nowadays, they don't stay very much longer. And I just like, you know, yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question for you from one of our listeners, Paul Cagebean, says, I find you to be a super underrated winner and would have loved to have seen you in Winners at War. What other winner in the past 20 years reminds you of yourself? And to self-evaluate, do you think that you and your gameplay has contributed to the long-term evolution of Survivor?
The first part of that, who do I think I had a similar game to? I always said Danny.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I love the way Danny was a fierce competitor, strong, athletic. Based on how they edited her as being very quiet at the beginning. Then you started to see her kind of bustle up towards the end. And that's how, again, based on how I saw it, I saw very much like her game. I would have loved to had an opportunity to go out there and compete with her. Her and I think her name was Stephanie. Stephanie LaGrossa.
LaGrossa.
Those were two women that I always was like, I would love to go out there and play with the two of them. Mm-hmm. In regards to the evolution of the game, I do think that the way I played the game had some... had left some legacy to it. Being able to kind of flip and play the game. I think that was huge. Making a strong last minute decision to really change the game was huge. I mean, standing on those stilts, talking to Kathy, making an agreement with Kathy and then flipping on Kathy mm-hmm. towards the end to better my game. I felt that was definitely something that was left in the books.
Yeah.
So I do believe that. I just feel it's unfortunate that I never had an opportunity to come back out and either try those same tactics again or do something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really think that between, you know, you and Sandra, you know, you really put out like a blueprint for, you know, how players could operate. You know, you don't have to necessarily be the person who is, you know, leading from the front. You know, there is a very effective way to, you know, get to the end and win when, you know, you're not necessarily, you know, on everybody's mind the whole time.
That's true. Very true. Now, I know, you know, I won a couple of challenges while I was out there and when I played my season. But out of all the times that Sandra was out there, did she ever win a challenge?
I don't think so. I have to go through the mental Rolodex.
You know, that lends a lot to her gameplay.
Yeah.
You don't have to win challenges to win the freaking game. You know, mm-hmm. you can go out there and just play a crazy great you know, psychological game, and she did. She's one of the most prolific mental game players that the game has ever had.
For sure, for sure. And I'll get to the bottom of if Sandra won a individual challenge before people will be mad at me. All right, let me keep going on that, because I'll get emails on that. Okay.
You're hilarious.
Okay, let me go back to, you know, you talked about luxury items. I have some luxury items questions for you, because you there were one of the few people that your luxury item really helped you in mm-hmm. the game, because Chris Snyder says back in Marquesas, V had the luxury item to write things. Of course, it was the notebook that mm-hmm. you brought with you to write things about the other contestants for the Final Four immunity. Since we don't hear about luxury items anymore, would you have another strategy for memorizing things about people, or would you not consider anything because that kind of challenge doesn't happen anymore? And I guess I would add to it. Did you write the stuff down about people because you knew that there would be a challenge about it, or was that helpful for other purposes?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. So that, number one, I don't have a great memory.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to be really leveraging the mental tenacity of my castmates, those that I would align with, to try to remember stuff, because I have horrible memory. That's why I did crappy on that one night challenge where we had to run in the woods and remember that freaking story. I think I had to take a bone back every single time. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't remember that story. But I think it was Africa. They did the challenge that we did.
Yep.
And they had to remember stuff of each other. So this is why I think God works so well, because I had three items that I wanted to bring for my luxury items. One was a thing of Vaseline. Actually, it was four. A thing of Vaseline, because when I was in the Air Force, you could use the petroleum for the oil for so many wonderful things, to cook, to put on your body, because, you know, black people. Yeah, because black people get ashy, and you could use that to kind of make sure you stay nice and glistening up. So that was one. The other one was my harmonica. I was learning how to play the harmonica, so I really wanted to bring that up there and just make that be a statement, so people can talk about me, be like, oh, she's good, or oh, she's horrible. You know, the other one was a Nerf, I think it was like a Nerf soccer ball or a Nerf something just to play with. And then the fourth one was my book of poetry. So it really was not a notebook. It was really a book of my poems.
Yeah.
And there were a few empty, empty pages in the back of it, but it was really my poems. And it was for me to be motivated. It was for me to be encouraging and for me to read them and things like that. And then I had, a pencil out there when I went on my own, I could write more poems as I was out there.
Yeah.
But when we started getting down to around that time, each time I would walk away and I was like, you know what? I remember they had a challenge at the end that they asked a lot of questions about each other. Mm-hmm. And I said, so when I sit down with people, and this was, again, part of my strategy, but then it was also part of my relationship building. Because the more you connect with people and learn about them, you're now connecting with them. And that helps build trust. So I would sit down and I made a determination to sit down with every single person. And I was the only person, I think I was like one of three, that actually was on the island with every single person on the show. Mm-hmm. And so I got an opportunity to sit down with every single person. And during my fun-loving conversations with them,
yes,
I would ask specific questions that I thought may be questions for that possible final tribal council. And so when I'd sit down with John, I'd be like, yeah, you and I were in the service. Were we in the same service? He's like, yeah, I was in the Air Force. Okay, mental note of that. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, how long were you in? Oh, 6 years, mental note of that. And then I'd go in the woods later on that night and just act like I was reading my poems, but actually John. And I just write down those key things in there and I check him off and then I just go with the next person. So the reason why I was doing it is because I remembered. Now, this is the one time that I actually had a good memory because I remembered that challenge and I was prepping myself for such a challenge, if it was to come up. And through the grace of God, and again, this is why I say God is so good, because I was bitching and moaning about wanting to bring my Bible, but yet they didn't let me bring my Bible, but they let me bring this book of poetry with my pencil. So he knew I didn't have a great memory, and he allowed me to use that to write all that stuff down. So this is why God is so good. Because when you don't think things are going to go out right, they turned out right. So,
yeah. Did you write any poems when you were out in the Marquesa?
I did. And I'm walking around my house right now trying to find my book because I wrote one called And a Survivor Lives.
Okay.
Yes. And it is about, see, I have to go into my closet here.
Yeah.
My bag, because I did a little session about a month ago, and I think I put it in, that those little ugly bags that you had to carry all your stuff in.
What do you mean did a session?
I did a little kind of motivational speaking event.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, it was probably about a month and a half ago, here local. And I brought my items, and I'm trying to see if it's in this bag.
Yeah.
Ew, this thing stinks, and I don't think it's
in here.
So
you have a bag of all your stuff from 20 years ago.
Yeah, those ugly wicker bags that they gave us from Survivor? I still have that ugly bag. And in that bag is the nasty, stinky clothes.
Yeah, is that the finale, right? They gave you a bunch of your stuff back?
No, the one that we carried on the island.
Ew.
yes. It's tucked up. And when I go to speaking engagements, I pull it out and I take it to the event. Yeah. And people love to look at it and smell it and, and ask me questions about it. So I allow them to do such.
They're like, can I smell your backpack?
They do. They're like, oh, Vesepia.
No.
And they go, were these included?
Vesepia, call security at that point.
And I go, yeah, and it stinks too. And some of them will pull it up to their mouth. Yes. Yeah. I'm sitting here seriously trying to find that book.
But don't go crazy. If you find it, yeah, we'd love, you know, definitely like put it on Instagram because it would be really cool to see.
I will. Yeah. It's the actual book of poetry that I took out on the island.
Yeah.
And so it's all tattered and beat down. But I still write poems in it. And I definitely have.
You write in the same book, V.
Not all of my poems, but every now and then I'll pull that out and I'll write stuff in it still. Yes. Yeah.
Will you ever turn that into a book like you did with your son?
I thought about it. A couple of the poems in it have been published before, years and years ago. And I have really thought about it. I'm not sure. Now you're inspiring me now. I may get in touch with my editor and see if she would like to think about doing something like that. Actually, my editor came highly recommended from our specialist.
Oh, from Phil.
Yeah, Phil recommended her because she did the editing for his books.
Yeah, cool.
And so worked very well with her. And so... and I enjoyed working with her, so I may reach out to her. So you may have inspired me. I may have to put a little thing in there to you, Rob. Thanks for inspiring me to put my poems in a book.
Well, Stan C. wants to know, did the other players notice or know that you were writing down details about them in the journal? And if so, did they ever respond to it? So did anybody ever catch you writing?
Great question. The only person that literally knew specifically that I was writing stuff about other castmates, because they knew I had the book of poetry. They knew that I was writing poems in it. But the only one that literally caught me taking notes of individuals was Zoe.
Oh.
And I knew that she was going to out me.
Mm-hmm.
So she ended up getting voted out, and I was so happy because I knew that she knew that I was writing specifically about individuals in that book.
Yeah. And did she say, hey, let me see what you're writing in that book?
No, she turned around. She was like, are you writing stuff about people in there? And I closed my book up real quick. No. And I was just like, girl, no. And she's like, yes, you are. And I don't know if she ever said anything to anyone, but I was like, oh my God, if she's going to out me, I am going to be so done.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think she ever did. And I want to say at some point, maybe she did to Kathy, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. You have to hide the book and make sure nobody ever steals it. Did you have a hiding spot for the book?
I carried it with me because, you know, we did a lot of water stuff.
Yeah.
So we always had to take our bags with us. And so I always put it in an extra, like, not just the water bag that they gave us, but also a Ziploc bag. So I really did keep it with me.
Yeah.
I really didn't kind of let it out of my sight. It was almost like a hidden immunity idol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. you were hiding advantages before there were advantages.
That's right. That's right.
You're ready. You're ready to go back.
So true.
Yeah. And the one other thing that is really remarkable to me about your story is I've never forgotten. I love the story that you told in the reunion show about how you kind of manifested. And I think that it was called that at the time, about getting onto the show and then ultimately winning the show when you wrote a note to yourself.
Yeah. So my whole saga getting on the show was first and foremost loving the show, watching it. And me and Jordan's dad was sitting watching, and I said, I love the show. I said, I want to get on the show. And he was like, yeah. I said, no, I'm going to send in a tape. And so when I did my audition tape, I knew exactly where I wanted to go. I mean, I literally visualized exactly where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. So we went all the way out to Stanford and we walked through these woods. And I said, that tree right there, that's where it's going to be. And his dad videotaped it. And I literally climbed in the tree And then he walked around acting like I was living in the woods. And he's like, we're out here looking for your auntie, because my niece and nephew were in town. And we're looking for your auntie. She's out here living out here to get ready for this Survivor show. Do you guys see her? And then I jump out right in front of the camera, do some Taekwondo kicks, blah, blah, blah. It was only one take. And I knew it was ready. I didn't want to do any more. He's like, you sure you don't want to do it again? I said, no, it's ready. It's done. Let's send it. So I packed it up and I prayed over it. And I just said, you know, Lord, you know, if it's in your will that I get on the show, then I will get a call, you know, and it's all up to you. And so then I sent it off. And again, about 30 days later, I got the first phone call. And then, you know, went to San Francisco for that interview, came on back home, prayed again that, you know, hey, if it's your will again, you know, then they will call me again. And it was like 8 days later, they called me again to go to Santa Barbara. So after that, once I got on the show, I actually took that book of poetry and I wrote in it. No, I'm sorry. Before that, I took a little sticky note. And on that sticky note, I said, I'm going to be on Survivor. And I just stuck that on my mirror the whole time while I was going through this process. Ended up getting on the show. And then after that, I came home and I wrote in that book of poetry, not knowing that they were going to select that for me to go. I wrote, I am going to win Survivor. Mm-hmm. And it's still in that book of poetry. And so obviously, you know, they ended up selecting my book of poetry as my luxury item, which I was frustrated about because I didn't want to do that. I didn't want it to get wet and soiled or anything. But, you know, hey, through the grace of God, it worked. And so every day I'd go out there and I continue to go to that page because the word of the Lord says, I will make your vision plain and make it plain on tablets, and you keep it before you. And if you keep it before you, it will not tarry, but that it will come to pass. And so I wrote it down. I made it plain. And also the word says, if you speak it into existence, that it will come to pass. And if you speak it within God's name. So every day I'd go out there, I'd open up that book to that page and say, I will win the show. Lord, you know, you didn't put me out here not to win. I will do this. And even on day three, when I was like ready, when I was done and I wanted to leave the show, because I was pissed off that these people were making me feel like I was a hypocrite and, you know, and all this stuff. I was just like, I can't do this. And the Holy Spirit told me, I didn't bring you out here to quit. And he goes, you're trying to play a Christian's game. You need to play a Survivor game. And he said, play within the rules of this game. And the rules of this game is to outwit, outplay, and outlast. So use your Christianity to your advantage, but play by the rules. And after that, I started to play a different type of game with a different type of mindset. But I never stopped going into the woods and having my moment with Jesus, mm-hmm. and opening up that poetry book and saying, I've written it. And it will happen. It will come to pass. And every day I did that. And, you know, and I just thank the Lord that it happened, you know, and I don't know how. I can't tell you, because a lot of the moves that I made were luck. A lot of the moves I made were skill. And a lot of moves I made was strategy.
Yeah.
You know, and some of it was based on, you know, a whim and a prayer.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I really, it stuck out to me because I've, you know, used that type of approach in the past. And I really do believe that it works when, you know, you write a goal and you look at it and you stare at it and you really just, you know, like reprogram your mind to like view the world through the lens that you are trying to convince it of this thought until it ultimately can become a reality.
That is so true, you know, and, you know, your words have power, and not just your positive words, but your negative words. Yeah. And if you manifest negativity and you say things negative all the time, then that's what you're going to manifest. And then you're going to be frustrated and wondering why, or saying, see, these things don't work. But you've put it into existence. You've spewed that into your environment and that energy. So I try not to do that. And granted, do I get everything that I say comes to pass? No. But I don't harbor on it either. I just say, Lord, you know, you didn't want me to have that. And it's all good. you know, and the time will come where you do want me to have something and I'll be ready for it.
Yeah. I hope people take that away from this conversation, because I think it's such a powerful thing that, you know, anybody could be using. And it's a good reminder to me to, you know, go back and make sure I have those things that are, you know, pushing me in the right direction, too.
Right. And it doesn't have to be about your faith or God, because I know not everybody follows faith, you know, but I do believe manifestation of your words and the power of your words is so important. And as you speak it, so it is. And that's why I always try to encourage people, especially when I'm doing life coaching, when people are coming to me and everything that they're saying is spewing negativity. I just say, that's one of the things you need to stop.
Yeah.
You know, and some work and some don't, you know?
Yeah. Well, I really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm so happy that you took the time to talk and, you know, to catch up here on the podcast. And, you know, it means a lot to me, but I just also hope that, you know, that I, you know, have heard from, you know, a lot of the listeners. And I know that all the people that see this show up in their podcast feed, that I think it's going to mean a lot to many people out there. So thank you for taking the time to do this.
Rob, thank you. You know, I've always loved, admired, and appreciated you and this venue that you've given us. So thank you so much. And also to the fans, you know, you really have poured into my heart, and I hope that this podcast will pour into your heart as well. And thank you for being a fan. And I love you all. I love you, Rob. And I hope all of you continue to be blessed and have a wonderful rest of this year.
Yeah. Well, Avith, thank you again. And is there anything that you want to tell people to check out or direct people to go in and look at anything?
Yeah. Once again, I just want to remind you to go to Amazon. If you'd love to pick up one of my books, it is Moms and Me, and we'd love for you to pick
Moms
it up.
With a Z.
Moms with a Z, M-O-M-Z, and Me, Vesepia Robinson and Jordan Robinson. And please let me know what you think about it. And, you know, be on the lookout within the next year or two for Moms and Me, too.
Yeah.
So thank you again, Rob. So appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, V, and really appreciate you. And all the best to you and Jordan.
Thank you. God bless you all.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Vesepia Robinson here on the podcast. And I hope you enjoyed that one as much as I did. I thought that that was a really fun one for me to do, and really appreciate Vesepia making some time to talk with me here on a Sunday night to record that one. So that was I thought that one came out really well. I hope you enjoyed it, too. And we will see if Vesepia perhaps served the 20 years as the only Black woman winner of Survivor. And we'll see if she is joined on Wednesday night by Marianne, a lot of people's favorite going in to Wednesday night. That will be very interesting. And we'll see how it all plays out. Of course, we will have our live coverage coming up Wednesday night with the Survivor Know-It-Alls. And I expect to have exit interviews with everybody from the top five coming up on Thursday. So make sure you don't miss any of it when you're subscribed to Rob as a Podcast. Go to robasawebsite.com/subscribe to make sure that you have everything that you need for not just Rob as a Podcast proper, but everything in our reality TV wrap-ups and Survivor-only podcast feeds and everything else we're doing. That's over at robasawebsite.com/subscribe. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.